Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking again. World has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
Welcome live on Tribe Family Channels, the recipe for literacy in the Black community, brought to you by Aaron Joshua and Alan Black. Thank you for tuning in. Please be sure to visit us online at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. Tribe Family Channel is a Gumbo for the Soul International family brand brought to you by gumboforthesoulinternational.com. And now, here's Aaron and Alan.
Hello, 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 everybody. Happy Monday. I am Aaron Joshua. I am a certified librarian, educator, author, blogger, radio host. You can find me at my website, lifeunlocked.org, LISEUNLOCED.org, and soon you can hear me on Teacher Talks every week. Hi, Alan.
Good evening, Aaron. Good evening, everybody. I am Alan T. Black. I'm a retired educator. I am also a podcast host with the fabulous Aaron Joshua and a co-host of a radio show here in Omaha, Nebraska called AJDW Conversation. I'm an international writer and a best-selling author, and I'm very, very excited, Aaron, tonight to have the honor of interviewing our guests who will be coming on here in just a few minutes.
Me too, Alan. I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a hip-hop head, meaning, like, I love hip-hop. I love hip-hop culture. I love hip-hop music. I was born in the 90s, but I love the story of hip-hop and everything that it's all about. So I am extremely, extremely excited to have our guest this evening. He is what I would call a living legend. He's a pioneer in hip-hop. He's a former member of the group Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. He's a producer. He's a writer. He's recently an actor. He has been inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he is a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award winner. And that is Mr. Raheem. Raheem, are you there? How are you? Are you with us?
Check this out. Welcome here, everybody. Check this out. I said the Truman to my sophomore year. Later it fell. So play a hating teacher said I'd never excel. Had my first hit song in 10th grade. I used to rock down the club under the beach. Jazz whistle, Jim Payne. Boredom though eventually let up the truancy. Kick his gas to call his Sean Saul. I'm from Lambert. Wake up, came over chest in a college grad. The past math class need a lot of cash. And this be shorter than a minute. Born sending hit cold chicks and balls here. Loving this life. Born there till I was introduced to this chick called Bates. And yo, the time we spent together, I could never erase. Life took a turn for the worst. The glass chick had me away on my third. Visions of myself laying in a hearse till I paid the price. Paid it all night to pay the pipe dreams. Just another day in the life of a pain. I blew more dough than most adults see in a lifetime at 18. They have to chase payroll like the 18. I was copping the issue of 100 grams in the back room of the fever getting filmed with my man. Fill it to half a quarter click and kept your feet to the field. Use ear flicks, don't tell her what your daughter gonna be. Have to hit the fifth field. Tweaking the I can't feel, and I'm knowing that this thing killed. I took a fall, but I bounced back. I got bigger dreams than bringing the ounce back. One bird, this is 25, can you count that? Are you ready for a cellar or grave? I doubt that. I got high with a little hope for my friends, to eventually diminishing my wealth and my ends. Something good, I was shackled to a base rock, chains on my ankle, but mama was always there, and I thank you. The real friend once said I was headed for self-destruction, but he told me I'm willing to take the helpful instructions. My career took a nosedive, finally all I hit rock bottom, and if the price is tall, You probably hear it say, habit was expensive cost in the GFA. Trap myself off in the prison of talk to TLA. Put a call in the guard, but the line was busy. Threw a brick in the bowl, but it only made me dizzy. Caught between the rock and the glass, watching the cloud, clocking the blast. I laugh now, but ain't no block in the glass. With no self-esteem, I gaze in the mirror and my reflection. The Bible said after death, there is resurrection. Been a long, lonely road coming back from the brink. Got disgusted with myself through the crack in the fist. With just the clothes on my back, at least I don't know no death. Kinda ill, no regrets yet, still no regrets. I retired from high times and survived by white lines. I'm simulated now when I sit right behind. So think about this, but put your life going to smoke. Don't touch, go cut your coat. Yeah, that's right. You don't want to take that road. You know what I mean? But I'm a living testament that in this life, you're gonna encounter obstacles. But the bottom line is obstacles sometimes knock you down. But it's not about how many times you get knocked down, it's about how many times you get back up. You know what I mean? Daddy was a junkie. Mama was a teacher. Cried when daddy stole the clothes. We got to eat the mama. Prayed to God, but he was too far to reach her. Life threw us the curve, so we swam for the bleachers. Big brother, slain came, got his name on the street. We run up and spray beans, got his name on something speech. When you really gangster, ain't gotta say it. It's a reflection of your actions. Are those directions that be casting for actors. No correctional facilities. Back to the rafters. No protection for killers. Even shackles or caskets. Hammers, ratchets. I don't even see no cadavers. So we question your realness. Don't believe your endeavors. No rap sheets, y'all cats don't call. My girl's the Bronx, VA. Whatever.
Yay! Hello, how are you, Raheem? How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
We are excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Raheem, this is Alan Black. The only complaint I have right now is that it stopped, and I was like, oh, man, we could just go on and on and on. So I would like to. It's definitely an honor to have the opportunity to share some time with you this evening and looking forward to our conversation. Aaron, I'm going to let you take it and flow like I know you know how to.
No pressure. Before we get started, Raheem, I just wanted to ask you, where is that performance that we just heard? Where was that? Where was that done? What was that about? Could you give us a little background about that?
Sure. That was that's like my serenity prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of perform that, you know, every time I have an opportunity to perform live. But that particular recording came from a BronxNet cable show. And they threw on an instrumental and asked me if I would do something. So I said, sure. That's what I did. I had no idea it was going to be, I knew they were filming it, but I didn't know, you know, it was going to kind of like, do well in social media as it has, excuse me. and I'm so it's inspired me to start working on project. So I'm working on a project in addition to a book.
That's amazing. What is your book going to be about?
My book is going to be primarily about my life. Prior to hip hop, during hip hop, I was with two legendary rap groups. The first rap group I was with was called DJ Breakout, DJ Baron, and the Funky Four MCs. And we had the first female MC, my sister, Sha Rock, and we had K.A. Rockwell, Keith Caesar, and Raheem. And we were kind of like the, I would say like Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Four's stiffest competition. And we battled them in 1979, May 11th, 1979, at the Webster Avenue PAL in the Bronx, 183rd Street and Webster Avenue, in the gymnasium. It was jam-packed, and Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Four won the battle, but a few days after the battle, Melly Mel, and at the time his name was Mr. Nick, he later changed it to Scorpio. They showed up at my mom's house and asked if I would be willing to join their group. And so that's how I got to be a member of that group.
Raheem, if I may ask, so going back to 79, approximately how old were you, and was this really the origin of how you started on this road to where you are today?
So I started in 78, and the majority of the first generation of rap artists started in 1978, after the blackout of New York City, which happened in 1977. And during the blackout of 1974, excuse me, prior to the blackout of 1977, not many people, aspiring hip-hop practitioners, DJs especially, they didn't really have, you know, two turntables and a mixer. And so the most of the aspiring DJs who didn't have two turntables and a mixer made these cassette tapes we call pause button tapes. And the pause button tapes simulated a DJ cutting two identical records back to back. But the difference between a DJ actually doing that and a pause button tape DJ doing it was pause button tape DJ only had one turntable, so each time they wanted to recycle that beat and play it, you know, from the top of the song, they would have to press the pause button on the cassette player down and hold it down and then let it go on the downbeat of the record. However, it wasn't precise enough in order for an MC or a rapper to say any extended rhymes to it. Like, you couldn't spit, like, you know, 8 or 16 bars, because you could never really determine whether or not it was on beat. So, the very first time that I heard a DJ cut two identical records on beat, and MC's rap while the DJ was cutting these two identical records to the beat, was Grandmaster Flash. I heard it on the cassette tape, and it made me cut school the whole day. I stayed outside in the yard, in the schoolyard, with this box, this boom box and this cassette. One of my homies, his name is Todd. My middle name is Todd. We clicked immediately. He brought this tape to school early in the morning with this boom box, and I'm listening to it, and I'm like, oh, nah, there's no way I can go to class today. So I stayed outside with the boom box all day listening to it. And then there were flyers that I saw around my block of Grandmaster Flash and the three MCs doing a jam in Harlem at a high school called Benjamin Franklin High School on 116th Street. So I went down there by myself. I would usually go with, like, my friends from my block, but I was too eager to see them and hear, you know, see what Flash was doing on the turntables up close and watch and listen to the MCs, right? So when I get there, the place is jam-packed, and I'm on the outside, and Flash and the three MCs' manager, his name is Ray Chandler, rest in peace, he just recently passed away, and ironically, he's the uncle of Dame Dash. So he's standing outside the entrance of the lunchroom, because that's where the party was, and he's telling about 200 more kids, me included, that we can't come inside because the place is too packed and the fire marshals are going to shut the place down if they let any more people in. But unbeknownst to him, behind him, someone had opened the door, the lunchroom door, to come out. But he had his back turned to the door, so he didn't see the door. But all the kids, including me, saw the door, and we took off running for the door. And we completely knocked him down and ran inside the lunchroom. And the lights were out, and so we got lost in the dark, so they couldn't find us. And I made sure I made my way up to the front to see and hear what Grandmaster Flash was doing on the turntables. And from that moment on, I was already emceeing. I was already writing rhymes or whatever, but I didn't join my first rap group when it was Grandmaster Flash and the three MCs. So I joined my first rap group, I guess, pretty much simultaneously when Grandmaster Flash and his MCs changed from three MCs to four. That's when I joined a group, DJ Breakout, DJ Baron, Funky Four. And so that was in 1978 and 1979. Battled. And also in 1979, our first recording. Yeah.
Yep. So, Raheem, were you always, or was your intent to just write rhymes, or were you always a writer? Is that something that you've always done, or was it just, oh, I'm going to be an MC, so I'm going to start this process of writing rhymes? What did that look like?
Well, okay, so actually, while I was in Truman High School up in the Co-op City section of the Bronx, North Bronx, my freshman year, I'm walking through the hallways, and there's this guy, and he's saying these rhymes, and, like, seemed like he was the Pied Piper, because all the girls, old school, was following him, like, everywhere he went. Just to hear him say these rhymes. And, you know, actually, the rhymes were kind of elementary and pretty corny, but but he had them. He had them. And so I asked him one day, he was a sophomore, and I introduced myself to him one day, and I asked him if I could hang out with him and learn how to do what he did, because I need girls following me around.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
So he obliged, and I started hanging out with him. He called himself Jazzy Joe, the voice of dance and disco. And, you know, that was obviously when disco music was king. And so I hung out with him, and he, the difference between his rap style and mine was the fact that he was like a disco MC, and the difference between like the disco MCs and the hip hop MCs back when disco was in was the disco MCs would put on this pseudo character voice, like kind of exaggerated. And I say, you know, kind of like Big Bang Hank from the Sugar Hill Gang sounded like that, actually. And so, you know, ours was more, you know, the hip-hop MC's delivery and tonality was much more, you know, natural the way that we spoke. but then every now and then Melly Mel would do that character, that pseudo voice as well. But I'm sorry. So what was the question again? I apologize.
No, you're fine. You answered it in some way. You started writing to get girls. Or something.
Oh,
the question was,
yeah.
Were you always a writer? Or?
So actually, I started as a singer. That was my first ambition. And you know, I sung okay. I sung in a few groups, and there was a group called Pew. They were called the Rhythm Makers first, and then they changed their names to GQ, and they made a record. But when they were the Rhythm Makers, they used to play block parties around my block. And I would be, you know, right up front of the ropes, mouthing all of their songs, because I put the words to all of their songs. So when the singer of the Rhythm Makers, his name is Raheem LeBlanc, he kind of took me under his wing. And he was like my first musical mentor, like after my mom. My mom was my first musical mentor. But she didn't teach me she didn't give me vocal lessons or anything. She schooled me by letting me hear all of the legendary artists that preceded hip hop. You know, Gladys Knight, Phipps, Smokey Robinson, Temptation. James Brown. I used to entertain my whenever my mom would do a house party, and she got tired of playing the DJ, she would put on James Brown's records, and I would come out and entertain them because I did all James Brown's dances. And then I discovered the Jackson 5. And so Jackson 5 were who inspired me to sing. Even though when I was 2 years old, and the very first song that I learned the words to and I started singing was by the legendary songstress Miss Nancy Wilson. And the song was called Sunny. And my mom loved the song, and my mom could sing. And so my mom would play Sunny and sing along. And so I learned the words. And I loved the song so much, I used to make her play it over and over again until she got tired of it. She tied it in a stack of 45, calling to me. And then I'd go in the 45. And I always find it because it had a very distinctive looking label, and make her play it some more. So that was my first, I guess, musical influence. Nancy Wilson, and then James Brown, and then the Jackson 5. When I heard the Jackson 5, that's what really made me want to be a singer. You know, Michael Jackson was everything. So he was my next James Brown. You know, James Brown was my Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was my James Brown. That makes sense. So then I joined a few groups, and you know, I was pretty serious about it, but you know, it didn't seem like the other guys, maybe one or two other guys were serious, but for some reason, whenever I thought about putting a group together, I always thought about Five, because of the Jackson Five. So, but the odds of getting Five dudes who are committed, serious, dedicated, and, you know, and all of our personalities mesh, chances of that are not great. I went through a few groups. We performed in a few talent shows and stuff. But when I got in Truman High School, aside from connecting with my first MC mentor, Jazzy Joe, I connected with a dude by the name of Christopher Williams, R&B singer, and we were members of the same singing group. And he used to try to, like, imitate me. And I'm like, dude, like, don't imitate me. Like, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to be out there just like you. I said, so it wouldn't be cool if we sound just alike. Like, I said, so how about this? I said, to me, you would hit the listening audience with a gut shot if you did somebody's style who was fire hot at one time, but they not popping like that no more. And like somebody like Teddy Pendergrass, like if you take Teddy Pendergrass's style right now, I'm like, yo, that's a home run for you, bro, because you like one of them pretty boy light-skinned dudes, and they wouldn't expect that rugged kind of voice coming out of your pretty, you know what I mean? So I'm like, yo, you should run with that, and he did. Yep. So, and I sung on a few of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five's, you know, music projects on a few albums and that sort of thing. I also did a song on the Juice soundtrack called Does Your Man Know About Me that I sung and rapped on and I produced. And I'm doing some light vocals on the project that I'm working on currently. You know, I'm starting to feel a little more comfortable as a vocalist, because I live alone, so I'm pretty shy. So I don't walk around singing all the time, but since I'm in here by myself, I can do it all day. Yeah, so it's like a muscle, you know. If you don't exercise it, then, you know, you can't, it won't develop.
Raheem, I have a question. I'm familiar with your song, Does Your Man Know About Me, from the Juice soundtrack. I have to be honest with I mean, the vocals that you did on there and the flow of the music was just outstanding. So
thank you.
Is there more of that style coming? Because I found myself thinking, I don't know about Aaron, I was like, man, this brother is flowing. It feels like a Sunday afternoon, you're driving through the city type of flow. It was there. So what else is coming from that direction?
Well, I am doing some, as I said, I'm doing some vocals on a few of the new songs that I'm working on. And my plight is to make feel good music, you know. And so all of the songs that I'm working on that contain any kind of singing vocals, I wanted to create a feeling, a vibe, and so I'm gonna do a few songs like that. But I'm not like I don't wanna limit myself, and I don't want to like I'm not afraid to jump out the window artistically. So I'm doing things that are really out of my comfort zone, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Yeah. So Raheem, you mentioned earlier something about your mother. Now, your mother was a teacher, correct?
She absolutely was. Yes.
So I guess I have a question. Do you feel like hip-hop can be used as an educational tool? And if it can, do you feel like hip-hop has educated you in some way? What have you gained from hip-hop, from the culture, from the music? What is the biggest thing that you've learned?
Okay. So I absolutely agree that hip-hop's learned tool of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I have lectured at Yale University, Cornell University. I'm on the board. They have like a hip hop exhibit there, and I'm on the board for that. And so, you know, I've lectured at like quite a few universities and other, you know, institutions. And hip hop is worldwide, and because, excuse me. Because rap music utilizes, you know, verbiage and speech, excuse me, there's no limit to how it can be used to teach people. It's given us a platform, and it's given a platform to people who didn't know that they had a platform. Excuse me. And the way it's educated me was through my ability to that the ability it provided me to travel to different countries, you know, experience different cultures. You know, when you have the opportunity to travel to different countries, it it broadens your perspective about life, about people. You know, we performed in countries where their primary language was not English, like Helsinki, Finland, and place that we performed at, we were the only performers, and we were the only black people probably in the whole country that night. And and all of those people at that show, they stayed after the show was over, and everybody wanted to buy us a beer. Like, you know, we went to the this festival in Germany called Oktoberfest. It's outside, and it's during like the Christmas holiday. And people come from all over the world to attend this Oktoberfest. They have all different types of foods and beers from, you know, different cultures, different Germanic cultures from, like, even medieval times and stuff like that. Pretty interesting. We got an opportunity to go around in these different cities to see historic places. So, like, places that we read about in, like, history in school. We never imagined that any recordings or any, because we started from the parks. So we never imagined, like, going from the park to playing in the club, and then playing in the club to playing in the Apollo Theater or Madison Square Garden. You know, we did that before there were many other rap groups doing it. It was just like Sugar Hill Gang, us, Afrika Bambaataa and the Soul Sonic Force, and Curtis Blow, initially. And, Nucleus. Yeah, Jam On. And then who was it? The Rappin' Duke. But I'm sorry, Mr. Black?
Yes, sir. Have a question for you. So as far as hip-hop, we know it is now international. Now, how have you been able to continue using hip-hop as a teaching tool? Could you share your experiences about that as well?
As far as the teaching tool goes, there are quite a few. Now, are you asking how have I been able to use it as a teaching tool?
Yes. With your travels and everything, I have to imagine you've had a huge impact, even using it informally or formally as a teaching tool. So just kind of share some of those with people.
Well, again, like, you know, whenever I have an opportunity to speak to a group of, you know, people, like for example, I was working with a hip-hop sightseeing tour in New York City called Hush Tours. And we take the tourists around to all of the points of interest that pertain to hip hop. And, you know, each place has a story. So we take them to where the Disco Fever was on 167th and Jerome Avenue. And so how I guess weave all of that into a learning tool is by visuals, you know, give them slides, showing them all the points of interest that pertain to the hip-hop, the birth of hip-hop. And there's definitely a chronological order to the way that, you know, hip-hop evolved. So we speak about, or I speak about the evolution of hip-hop, the commercialization of hip-hop, the exploitation of hip-hop, because, you know, when something starts from the seed, grassroots, you know, it's organic, but once corporate anybody gets up to it, it essentially changes the nature of what that organic thing was forever, because it's corporate everybody's duty to assimilate, you know, to find, find out what is culturally trending and adopt it, modify it, repackage it, and give it back to people they stole it from.
Mm.
That's the corporate way. So, I give them all of that in my presentation. You know, how it went from a grassroots, not even an organization, I won't call it one, because it was anything but organized initially. It was just a movement run by predominantly black adolescents. There were sprinkles of Latins, but not many. And we basically created, we didn't know we were creating a movement, but you could tell that a movement was happening, because when we did it in the Bronx, the level of popularity that like my group, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, got to even before we even recorded our first record, like we were doing like three parties a night at three different clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So we were that popular in New York, in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And so we were able to, you know, get a slew of bookings in just the tri-state area before we even had a record. But then when we put out a record, our first record wasn't that, you know, successful. But so I'm sorry to get off topic, but I put all of that history, I put into my presentation. I give them the, as far as the exploitation of hip hop, you know, besides explaining how, you know, corporate America modified it and regurgitated it and gave it back to us in a way, in a very destructive, manipulative way. It's called the power of suggestion. When you hear anything repetitively, like music, in rotation,
mm-hmm.
and every day of your young impressionable life, or you hear from your favorite artist who's probably in your ear more hours a day than your parent and teacher, and they're telling you that the very blueprint to their success was to stand on the corner and sell Molly's and Percocet and, you know, F-holes and you know, and kill people who look like us, that's the people who are most influenced by that become that. It's called the power of success. And so in 1990, one of the largest facilitators of independently owned penitentiaries in this country called Corrections Corporations of America made deals with 48 states in the country to have a privately owned penitentiary erected in that respective state based on the condition that they could maintain a 90% incarceration rate. So if, you know, again, if every day of your most impressionable years of your life, you're listening to this music and it's telling you these things, and it seems like it's lit, you know, it's popping, it's trendy, you know, you're gonna be influenced by that. And the government knows how much, you know, people are influenced by music, and especially, or not even just music, visual images and audio frequencies are two things that enter our subconscious mind without our permission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, case in point, you hear a song and you could hate the song, but if they're playing it on your local radio station, heavy rotation, one day you're going to know all the words.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just the way it is. So those are the things that I, you know, in my teaching.
So Raheem, has that been the, as a person who was there at the beginning of hip-hop and to see where it has gone now, and even how you bring up the, basically the school-to-prison pipeline is how you get them when they're young and you set them on this path where they're going to be somewhere where they don't want to be. Is that the biggest difference that you've seen from the beginning of hip-hop? Because like you said, it was for underrepresented communities to speak out, and now it feels like it is not helping but hurting. Does that make sense?
Yes, they've weaponized our music against us. Look, our government knows full well how powerful the power of suggestion is, because they've placed strict government regulations against any advertising agencies prohibiting them the ability to advertise the sale of tobacco in any medium, in any advertising medium. They don't advertise the sale of cigarettes because they know a percentage of the population already smokes. If they were to advertise it, a much larger percentage of the population would smoke. So as that pertains to music, if you're hearing this music in, you know, heavy rotation, and even songs like, you know, this is an older song, but, you know, these hoes ain't loyal. Excuse my language, ladies. Like, is a young man supposed to have, or a young woman, when they are constantly bombarded with messages of these hoes ain't loyal? It's influencing. It's influencing You know, we may, you know, shrug it off and be like, you know, it's fun, you know, and, you know, some people are, you know, take it too seriously. But at the end of the day, words are spells.
Mm-hmm. Try to call
Same
it spelling.
Word. Yes, that's why they call it spelling, yes. And broadcasting is broadcasting a spell on a much, much larger scale, okay? They are using magic unbeknownst to us against us. We don't understand that what they are using against us is that is what magic is. And all you need in order for a spell to be effective are for people to participate knowingly or unknowingly. Here's another case in point. A nickname. A nickname is usually bestowed upon someone. Back in the days, it was more bestowed upon someone against their will. Like, you know, you didn't really like the nickname that you got when somebody else gave it to you, you know. I had three friends named Melvin. One was fat, one was skinny, and one had bad skin. So the fat one we call Fat Melvin, the skinny one we call Skinny Melvin, and the one with the bad skin we call Bumpy Face Melvin. And neither one of them liked those pseudonyms that preceded their names. However, what made those pseudonyms stick was the fact that they never vehemently rejected those names to the people who were casting that spell upon them. And so we have to be very careful about what we are intellectually ingesting, just like we have to be careful about what we ingest nutritionally.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectual garbage is just like bad food. Yeah. You are what you listen to.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I can... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Raheem. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say every song, you know, you don't have to be preaching to nobody in every song. And, you know, we can still have a good time and still, you know, enjoy hip-hop music the way that we all have. But we need diversity back into it. You know, it lacks the diversity that it once had.
Well, and Raheem, I was going to say that even in the spiritual realm, Scripture talks about the power of the tongue, and you can speak life and death. And you're alluding to the fact that the music now is speaking death and destruction into our youth, which is just a fact.
Yes. Listen, the CIA uncovered documents and that they have done experiments, and it's a proven fact that manifestation is real. So if manifestation is real and the power of words are real, you can't, rest in peace, you know, our beloved brother Biggie, but he made a song, or excuse me, an album called Ready to Die.
Mm-hmm.
And it was broadcast. It was broadcasted on a worldwide scale. Ready to die. Okay?
Yeah, you're putting out there what you think could happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Raheem, where do we make the change? How do we make this change to turn the tide from the direction we're currently dwelling in?
as far as I'm concerned, the only way to turn the tide is to bring about the awareness of what's being done to us. If, you know, if everybody's walking around in oblivion, you know, because we're all so deep in the forest we can't see the trees, then, you know, it's a moot point. We have to educate us on what's happening to us, or what has happened to us and continues to happen to us. Because, you know, knowing is half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people will make a decision. Like the youth of today, they're really, really rebellious, but as rebellious as they are, I listen to a lot of them. I watch a lot of TikTok videos, and the youth of today, they're wide awake.
Mm.
They're wide awake, for the most part, and they are very well aware that our government doesn't give a damn about us, and that everything is being used against us as a weapon. And they are in search of truth, guidance, but, you know, and knowledge. And so if we bring that knowledge to them, especially because it pertains to what they love, if we present it to them in a way, in an attractive package, and sprinkle some sugar on it, I think that they will ingest it and and get a great understanding of where we currently are and where we need to be.
Amazing.
Aaron, if I may interject, I don't know how you feel, but I'm almost in a way. This ties back to the theme song that opens up our program, which is Wake Up Everybody, Harold Melvin, the Blue Note. That is thematically where we have to go.
Absolutely.
That is true.
Yes.
That's true.
Yep.
So, Raheem, tell us what's new, what's next for you, where everybody can find you, where we can participate in this work. What's next for you? Where are you?
Well, I'm in the process of writing my autobiography called The Book of Raheem, thanks to my beloved sister, Miss Beverly Black.
Yay!
And,
absolutely. That's right. through Gumbo for the Soul. And, you know, she's my publisher. She's my everything. I can't even, like, Bev just hold me down. So, I'm working on it's a series of books. It's a 3-book series. And I'm in the process of penning the first one. And it's due for release in September. I'm speaking to a few writers about possibly doing a biopic about my group from my perspective. So we're actually in a really good writing space. So hopefully, maybe next year, we'll begin to shop it. And other than that, I'm working on some new music. And you can find me at Instagram, Raheem, Raheem .official. Yep. And once you find me on Instagram, that'll pretty much link you to all of my social media outlets.
Perfect. We have a quick note from the actor Antonio Fargas. He tells us, please give my regards and respect to the brother Raheem. Acting is an important part of being and knowing who you are. He loves your work, and he enjoyed your interview. So just wanted to let you know that and give you your flowers real quick.
Yo, that is everything right there. What? Antonio Fargas?
I know,
man.
Right?
Wow. That's a legend.
Wow. That is
complimented.
Wow.
Huggy Bear?
Huggy Bear. Absolutely. You ain't never lied. Wow. Thank you, sir.
So, Ron, we're going to have you back. I'm good barely on the spot, but we've got to have you back, particularly when the first of your three series books comes out, because I have no question in my mind, I don't know how Aaron feels, but the impact and the importance of what you're sharing from your experience is going to be a huge blessing to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Looking forward to it myself.
I agree with that 1,000% because I still have a whole page of questions that I didn't even get to ask you, but you're going to come back and we're going to get to it. So thank you so much. I am Aaron Joshua, and you can find me on Instagram at lady_Joshua1. You can find me on my website, lifeunlocked.org. You can buy my book, Things I Only Say in My Head. You can get on Amazon or you can get on my website. And I am a librarian, I am a teacher, I am a radio host, and I am honored to be here with everybody. Alan, where can everybody find you?
Hi, I'm Alan T. Black. They can find me. I'm a retired educator, a best-selling author, and you can find me at alantblack.com, alantblack.com, and they can get information about my books. I'm also a radio show host for AJDW Conversation. If you Google that, that will bring up four brothers here from the Nebraska area who get together on every Sunday and just kick it and just talk about all kind of different things related to us as a community. And I also want to send out a quick invitation to everybody to please tune in this upcoming Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm honored to be the host of what will be the Men of Honor Roundtable Discussion. Very excited about what's going to be coming on, to have men coming together to share and to be, in a way, transparent if what we need as men to continue to strengthen our community. Again, that will be the Men of Honor Discussion, April the 3rd, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us. You will be blessed, I guarantee it.
This has been amazing, Raheem. Thank you so much for spending your evening with us. Hope to hear from you soon. Thank you so much, Alan. And you gentlemen have a beautiful, beautiful night.
You too. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for the honor, sir.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from
what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We'll just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long. Judgment day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.